want the Big Ten championship, and we're going to win it as a team. No man is more important than the team. No coach is more important than the team. The team, the team, the team. When the old season is over, you and I know it's going to be Michigan again. Michigan.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Run Past Michigan, our RPM podcast here on The Athletic, with football to discuss for the second time in many, many months. I'm, of course, Nick Baumgartner, along with Austin Meek. Austin, are we ready to talk actual football topics today that we think are going to hold for maybe a month or two here?
It feels like football. I think today's the first day of fall. We get some beautiful fall weather here in Ann Arbor. So it feels like it should be football season. And it is football season, I guess. Again, for now, we hope.
Yeah, like that's been the weird thing all summer, right? Where there were so many times where we're like, well, we think this is going to happen, but we're not sure. But we're pretty positive now at this point, unless things go completely off the rails, that we'll have football in a month. Very exciting stuff, of course. And Austin, for Michigan, already, you know, a lot of stuff to talk about, and a lot of stuff that was probably simmering, and we can sort of dive right in today. And I think probably number one on the list for everybody is Joe Milton, right? I mean, that's probably the quarterback thing for the last 2 years really has been everyone after Shea Patterson settled in, obviously, and they got the transfer settled in 2018, and it was clear that he was going to be the guy that year, whether or not he came back, whatever. The focus on Joe Milton or Dylan McCaffrey was a 2 or 3 year situation for Michigan fans. And it is indeed, it appears it will indeed be Joe Milton. Very exciting stuff. But your first thoughts anyway on all this, Austin, when as we sort of assume it will end up being Joe Milton with Dylan McCaffrey on his way out.
You know, kind of an anticlimactic conclusion to that quarterback competition that had been building since the end of last season. I think, you know, going clear back to the podcast we did after the Citrus Bowl, we talked about how this is one of the most intriguing position battles of Jim Harbaugh's time at Michigan. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of excitement and anticipation to get into camp and to see these two guys really go head to head. Then, of course, camp gets put on hold. The season gets postponed. Everything's in flux. And then in the span of about 24 hours there, we found out, Michigan's going to play football and they have their starting quarterback because Dylan McCaffrey's not going to play. So you know, we talked about that possibility last time on the show. And since then, it's been more solidified that Joe Milton's going to be the man. And you actually wrote about that today, of some of your first impressions of Joe Milton the first time you saw him, the first time he stepped on campus. So what's your thought on this? Because I know that we have talked about how the skill set of Joe Milton is different from what anybody else on this team can do. You know, he just had some unique things about him that you know, gave him an edge here, but you know, we didn't know in terms of experience and where he was in mastering the offense. But what's your thought, you know, both on Joe Milton being the front runner and also just on, you know, on the timing of this and the fact that he was able to apparently win the job without any without any practices and pads?
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. And I think some of that probably has much to do with, you know, Dylan McCaffrey leaving. I mean, you know, I don't know if that happened overnight or if that was a trending thing. I don't know all the details there. But either way, I think the thing to take away that gets talked about some, but not probably as much as other things with Joe Milton, is that, you know, if I can remember back to the winter that he enrolled in 2018, 2018. I actually wrote about this morning. I was trying to remember and blanking out there. But so he enrolls in that winter. And if you go back even further, a couple months prior to that, you know, in the recruiting period leading up to that signing day, Michigan actually had another quarterback. They took Milton first, and then they took Kevin Doyle, I believe was his name. Kevin Doyle ended up going to, I think, Arizona maybe, and then I'm not sure if he stayed there or not. But either way, so they took two quarterbacks, and there was this whole thing at the time, like, you know, are they settled on one? Do they not know what they want to do? Oftentimes when we see teams take two quarterbacks, that can sort of indicate maybe they're not totally sure. Maybe it's an insurance deal, whatever. And so it made you wonder, right? And then obviously as time went on, they settled in on Milton. Milton didn't waver. He wanted to be at Michigan for a number of different reasons. And then the thing that really struck me was when he got there, it wasn't like 3 weeks hadn't gone by before you started hearing stuff about this kid is really impressive. And you're like, well, what do you mean impressive? Like, well, he's a physical, like he is so physically gifted just naturally as a 18-year-old kid who actually was 17 when he got there. And then I think beyond that, it was his attitude and his, like, just... And I wrote about it a little bit this morning about the Paris trip and some observations that I had when they were over there. He's just... Everybody loves him. Like, everybody just... And it's not... This isn't, like, a slight to anyone else. But I can't remember too many times when you'd see an early enrolled freshman hanging around with the team. And, you know, this wasn't a kid that was going to start that year. We, you know, Shea Patterson was going to start that year. We all knew that. But everyone just seemed to gravitate toward Joe Milton. He has this personality. He has something about him. I think his attitude seems to be nothing but positive all the time. Everybody just loves the kid. And that really sort of stuck in there with you as time went on throughout that year. You know, we talked that season. Michigan actively tried to get him involved in the game, in games at times, sometimes to its detriment. I think sometimes they forced it a little bit, but I think the point was, is that they really loved how hard he was working, how much better he'd gotten, how further along he probably was in terms of his just sort of feel for the game. You know, he didn't play high school football at a football factory or anything like that. So a lot of it was just sort of him. You know, he was a lot like Brandon Peters, I thought, and that Brandon Peters played just a normal high school career and sort of played on feel. And I think Milton did the same thing. But as time went on, there just kept being these, you talk to people and they're like, you love Joe Milton, love Joe Milton, love Joe Milton. Great kid, works his ass off, is ready to go. And then obviously the arm and all the physical traits that we can get into. But really, it's always been for me since Milton's gotten here, you just don't hear anybody ever say anything that's not like, I really like this kid. I really, really hope he gets a chance to play here because I really want to see it. That's been the thing that's carried it for me. And I think a lot of people would probably agree. You know, that was the case when Pep Hamilton was here. That was the case when Josh Gattis got in. They just like the kid. So I'm excited to see it. I don't know how it's going to work. I don't know how ready he is or isn't. But I think we know, based on watching snippets of him over the years, that physically, he checks all the boxes you can check, and mentally, he seems like he has a chance to be exactly what they need him to be.
Yeah, and this is obviously a unique situation, with the season we have, with the off season they've had, and I wonder if all of that maybe came together where it was a decision to go with the player who presented the highest upside,
yeah,
versus the player maybe you were a little more familiar with. We hadn't seen either Dylan McCaffrey or Joe Milton in a big sample size at all. Mm-hmm. But you remember going into last season, Jim Harbaugh was talking about Dylan McCaffrey being essentially a co-starting quarterback. So clearly, right, they were high on Dylan McCaffrey going into last season, and then he had the injury that knocked him out for part of the year. You wonder how history might have been different, if Dylan McCaffrey doesn't get hurt last year, if he gets a bigger opportunity last year to be on the field, would he be entrenched as a quarterback going into the season right now? You don't know. But the way all of that played out, it was basically, those two guys on equal footing going into the off season. And then it was just such a, such a bizarre off season. And we get to this point now where we're going to have, a 4-week ramp up now, basically, until we get to the season that begins in late October. It feels to me like the decision came down to, we're gonna go with the quarterback who gives us the highest upside. And I'm interested to see how this offense evolves with a player with Joe Milton's skill set playing quarterback, because obviously he can stretch the field. I mean, that's gonna be the thing that everybody talks about is his arm strength, his ability to go downfield. He brings some mobility. He's not gonna be Michael Vick out there, but he can move. That was something that we didn't see much last season with Shea Patterson. The quarterback run game was not a big element of the offense last season. Maybe that becomes more more of an element of the offense this year. I don't know. I'm just I'm super curious to see what happens, and it just it kind of feels to me like, hey, this is a totally unique season. Like, this is nothing about this is normal. let's just give this guy a shot to go out there and see what he can do, and maybe we'll catch lightning in a bottle.
Okay, everybody, before we get back to RPM, a quick message after this break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you nailed it. And we talked about this in like January or February or whatever it was, that Milton just had more stuff that you could use, you know, within your system. Whereas, you know, McCaffrey, you know, you mentioned the injury. I mean, that wasn't the first injury he'd suffered. I mean, he got hurt the year before with a shoulder or a collarbone. And then he had a pretty nasty concussion that looked pretty serious, you know, during last season. So, I mean, he was a lighter framed guy, good player. I mean, I think that's not to be overshadowed here. I mean, Dylan McCaffrey's a good football player when he's healthy and everything's tuned in, and they loved him too. I mean, that's not to say that they didn't, you know, locker room coaches the whole shot. But Milton is 6'5", 245 pounds, something like this. Mm-hmm. And he's not like a 4'4 guy, but he's not slow. I mean, he's certainly fast enough to run in space and make people, you know, give people problems. And most important, outside of the massive arm, the ability to make every throw on the field, all those things, which you have to be able to do if you really want to be something different, you don't want to run your quarterback, you know, 25 times a game or what have you. But when we talk about quarterback run game in sort of the modern day here, it's sort of trending a little bit back to what it was years and years ago, where those quarterbacks are taking hits now. You know, I mean, people are running. You look at the NFL, I mean, you've got guys running quarterback power. You've got guys running, you know, a little bit between the tackles sometimes. I mean, it's a part of the offense. It's not something you're relying on for everything, but it's part of your offense. And Milton, his body is, you know, he's just bigger and stronger. I mean, he's going to be more capable of taking more hits and sort of maybe even delivering some in some yeah. cases if you're coming up against a smaller linebacker. So, I mean, there's just another layer that he adds with all of the things he has physically sort of within his arsenal. And if you can sort of tailor a game plan around all that with sort of the speedy pieces that they have in, you know, like a Giles Jackson, Sandra Still, I know they like A.J. Henning and Roman Wilson coming in. They still have Nick Eubanks, who's a really talented tight end. Ronnie Bell, we've been down the Ronnie Bell path before. He's going to catch a lot of passes for them. So they have guys, and including those backs in the backfield, there's questions on the offensive line. But Milton sort of, you know, I've looked at it this whole way. His toolbox just seemed bigger to me. Like, it just always seemed like he would have, if all things were equal, and it really always seemed like they were. I mean, McCaffrey only had 1 year of experience advantage on him, and it wasn't in-game experience. And, you know, they had the same amount of experience. They had the same amount of experience with Josh Gattis. I just feel like Josh Gattis can do more with what Milton can give you. And, you know, whether or not it's a smooth sailing or perfect or whatever, I wouldn't anticipate that. I mean, I think it's going to be rough for everyone in college football this year. Even the players we expect to be great, I think, are going to have hiccups. You know, we can just look at the NFL for that. I mean, these first 2 weeks with, you know, sloppy tackling, a lot of the injuries that have been unfortunate, you know, careless mistakes from guys that you're not used to seeing careless mistakes for as they sort of shake rust off. I think that's important to remember in all this, and that he's a first-year quarterback and it's not going to be perfect and he's not going to be, you know, gift-wrapping the Heisman Trophy after 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's important for everyone, I think, and I say this every year and people laugh and some people think it's stupid and some people agree, but like, I just hope people are, you know, and I said this before, even McCaffrey or Milton, I just hope people are willing to sort of calm themselves enough to let the kid play a game first before right. they sort of craft where they think he should be in his first year. Because I think he's going to get there. I really do. I mean, if you're asking me today on September 22nd, I think Joe Milton's going to be a good quarterback in Michigan before he's done. I don't know when that's going to happen, but they're just too much on his sort of plate with everything he can give you. It just, barring an injury or something crazy, I just think he's going to get there. There's too much. He's too talented in too many areas for it not to work as I'm sitting here today.
There's definitely a fine line there between talking about what his potential is and what he can be, and also, yeah. tempering that with a little bit of caution about, you know, let's give the guy a chance to start a game, you know,
exactly.
before we anoint him. But look, if we're talking about his potential, if we're talking about, you know, what is the best case scenario for Joe Milton, you know, there's definitely some, you know, there's a little bit of Cam Newton in, you know, mm-hmm. just physically the tools that he has. Yep. You know, big guy with a cannon for an arm who can move. I mean, talking about the best case scenario, that's what you're looking at. But there's a lot that has to happen for him to, you know, to get to that point. A lot of things that are going to have to come together. You know, in the limited time we've seen him play, I think you would say one of the areas that he's going to have to develop, you know, and I think he said this, is, you know, not everything is a 99 mile an hour fastball.
Yeah. Right.
You got to be kind of like a pitcher. You got to be able to change speeds. You know, you got to be able to throw with some touch. You got to be able to, you know, put the ball in a really precise spot sometimes. So, you know, I think a lot of those things are going to determine, you know, ultimately whether Joe Milton gets to that ceiling. You know, we know that he can throw the ball a mile. We know he can throw it hard. You know, can he bring the precision to the passing game that's going to really make him, you know, the complete package? You know, and that was, frankly, that's what was missing from Michigan's passing game a year ago. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw, excuse me, many times, you know, Shea Patterson just a little bit off. You know, a throw that had a guy open, you know, an inch or two higher or lower, a big play that just didn't happen. So that's what you're looking for now. The next step for Michigan's offense is to have that precision, because in this era of football, you know, your quarterback can't be completing 50% of his passes. And that's where Michigan was way too often last year with Shea Patterson. You know, you've got to be efficient in your passing game. And when you can mix in efficiency with the big plays that we think Joe Milton's going to provide, then you've got an offense. Now you're talking about an offense, you know, that's performing at, you know, at the level you need to be at to win championships. You know, that's where Michigan eventually wants to get, hopes to get. Mm-hmm. And I think Joe Milton's got a shot to get him there. I don't know if he will, but I think he's got a shot.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing to remember. I think he's going to be good here before it's all done. I mean, but again, you can't predict everything perfectly throughout the rest of time. I mean, ultimately, of course, though, like you said, I mean, they do enough, as we saw last year, and we saw it in the tail end of last season, in the regular season anyway, including parts of the Ohio State game, when Shea Patterson was sort of dialed in, when he got himself sort of settled into the offense, into a rhythm. They were finding guys. I mean, guys were open, and he was delivering it to them. And you saw, even in the Alabama game, when there were misses, those were misses on guys that were open. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something to remember as you go back through last season, when it looked good, and the ball, you know, the Michigan State game, for example, when guys are open and they're delivering, it looked good. Indiana was one that stood out. And obviously Michigan's got more talent, you know, than those teams in those situations. But you know, guys were getting open. Guys were being schemed open. They were using the pieces that they had, it seemed anyway, the skill pieces, the receivers, and eventually using Collins in a way that, you know, sort of helped give them a bunch of extra room underneath. And it started to work. And it took a minute. And, you know, the first quarter of the season was a lot rockier than I think anybody wanted it to be or anticipated it to be or hoped it would be. But it happened. And then they were able to move on. So I think the point there is, you can do a lot to sort of help protect a new quarterback and let him be comfortable and not heap too much on his plate. And I think it helps now, too, that, you know, Josh Gattis is in year two as a play caller. So he's not going to be as geeked up maybe as he might have been. And I know, you know, and he kind of told us that at the beginning of last year. You know, he's an intense guy. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, makes sure he tries to keep everything sort of. And that was from moving to the press box down to the field. Didn't want to get too excited. Didn't want to get too, you know, ramped up for his first, you know, because that was a dream come true for him too. First time calling plays. He's done that, so it's not going to be anything like that. I think that they're in a better position for all that to work. And it's going to be about, right, it's going to be about how consistent can he be with, you know, with the accuracy. How consistent can he be with the underneath stuff? You know, when you got to check the ball down, make sure you check it down. I think the one thing too to caution, and like you said at the top there, Austin, with a guy like Milton, whose arm is as strong as it is, and he knows it's as strong as it is, making sure that you're not always living on the risk. You know what I mean? Like, that's probably the thing that they may have to work with a lot on him. And we see it still in the NFL with guys when they have that crazy elite arm, and that's what that is. I mean, Milton's arm is as big as any high school prospect or whatever I've ever seen doing this. And you get into these habits where you just think, well, you know, that coverage isn't what I want, but that route looks like it's kind of there. I'm going to try to fit it in and see what happens. You do it once and it actually works, and then you do it four more times and you get burned. So, I mean, like, there's going to be lessons. It's not going to be perfect, I don't think, but that's the case kind of across the board. I do think, though, ultimately, it shouldn't be overlooked, his attitude and his, you know, again, guys just liked him. I mean, they all seem to like him a lot. And I don't know what that all equates to or means one way or the other, but there's never been a moment that I've ever heard anybody say anything other than like, we really hope this works out because he's a really good kid. And, you know, we really, really hope it can, you know, sort of happen. So that's always kind of stuck there with me. And I think for a quarterback, there's something to that. You got to have that somewhere in there. And I think Milton has it.
So the other development that happened since we taped our last show, we have a schedule now. It took us an hour and a couple different television networks to unveil that on Saturday morning. But we have it now. You know, I don't think there was a whole lot of suspense with this. We basically knew the teams that were going to be on schedule, aside from maybe one game that was a coin flip. But so Michigan gets the crossover games against Minnesota. That's the opener on the road against Minnesota. They get Wisconsin at home in week four. The Ohio State game goes to the end of the season in December. I believe that will be the first December matchup between these two teams in the history of the rivalry. And then Penn State takes that Thanksgiving spot on the weekend of November 28th. So no real surprises there. But a tough road. I mean, we knew that. We knew it was going to be, not very many gimmies on this schedule. But Nick, any impressions about that now that we can look at it on paper?
Yeah, the West crossover was about as it was as difficult as you could have asked for or drawn up, which was sort of that way at the beginning, right? I mean, I think all they really did here was lop off Purdue.
And
it's the same with the crossover. So you get Wisconsin and Minnesota. So that's tough, obviously. And I guess the thing that I sort of thought about it as I went on there was, you know, that at Minnesota game would, you know, which is the opener. If you can imagine that in any other circumstance, like if they had fans, like PJ Fleck would have been, you know, wandering around the Twin Cities, gathering up as many people as he could individually, giving them free tickets and being like, come in here and make this the most raucous thing you've ever heard. And that's not the biggest stadium in the world, but I've been there at night when Michigan's been in there and it's been pretty loud when they've wanted it to be. So Joe Milton's first start at Minnesota, likely anyway, won't have to be with a crowd, won't have to be with all the crazy stuff that we always equate to college football games on the road, which do matter. They do, you know, maybe not in the NFL as much, but in college, absolutely. The atmosphere, everything else, when that's taken away, that makes life a hell of a lot easier on the road team, especially a young quarterback or a guy starting for the first time. And I think that that's important to note, whereas Minnesota is a really good football team with, you know, heading in the right direction, really good quarterback play. They also have a new offensive coordinator. I believe they have a new offensive line coach as well. There's adjustments they've had to make too. I think in any other scenario, if fans were allowed to be in the stands, this could be a problem for Michigan. It still could be a problem. But I do think that that opener without the fans, it's got to be a better situation for a new quarterback to break in there. I mean, you've got to be okay with that, but also okay with the fact that, okay, you're going to know really quickly. You're going to know how, you know, where you're at as a team, because you're not going to tiptoe in against, you know, some team that's just not, you know, you're not starting against Rutgers or a 1AA team or a MAC team or something. You're starting against what most expect to be one of the better teams in the West on the road with a new quarterback. We're not going to have to wait long to figure out, you know, where they're going. And I think that that's kind of exciting as you look at it. But yeah, I mean, the schedule, the rest of it, you know, those three games, Wisconsin, Penn State, Ohio State, that's the whole thing. I mean, that's the whole thing for Michigan. It's the whole thing. It was the whole thing last year. It was the whole thing year before. It's the whole thing now. You've got to be able to navigate through those games to have any chance to, you know, go up against Ohio State at the end of the season with the division on the line. And that's ultimately Michigan's entire plight here. And, you know, you get Wisconsin at home. You get them both at home, I guess. But again, same thing works, right? Where it's like there's no crowd. So, I mean, I don't know how daunting these home games are going to be able to be for you one way or the other. But those are the three ones, obviously, that you circle and say the whole season's going to hinge on that.
All right, folks, hey, if you're listening to this podcast and you are a subscriber to The Athletic, we really appreciate you coming along for the ride. If you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, we have a great deal for you. You can subscribe to The Athletic right now for just $1 a month. That'll get you all the exclusive coverage of Michigan, Michigan State, Big Ten, Lions, Pistons, Red Wings, whatever you're into, you can get that at The Athletic. And you can get it right now for just $1 a month. So don't miss the exclusive in-depth coverage. Subscribe and save. Sign up now to see for yourself the creativity, reporting, and storytelling that sets The Athletic apart. You can go to theathletic.com/RPM, receive an all-access subscription for just $1 a month, or anytime you click on one of Nick's stories, one of my stories, any of our stories, you'll have a link in there to take advantage of that promo for $1 a month. So thank you for subscribing and supporting our work. And back to the show. Yeah, we went from originally Michigan was scheduled to open the season at Washington, which was going to be a tough road trip in the first week of the season. In version two of the schedule, they were opening at home against Purdue. Mm-hmm. And now in version three, they're on the road again against Minnesota. So we're kind of back to the original storyline here of, can Jim Harbaugh get his team ready to go on the road week one? And these road games against ranked opponents, we know that's been a heavy lift for Michigan. That's really what you zero in on and say, well, if Michigan is going to take the next step as a program, what do they need to do? They need to win some of these road games against ranked teams. And we'll find out, I guess, how much of the road struggles are, the fact that, as you've mentioned before, Michigan always gets everybody's best shot on the road. You know, gets the best crowd, the best atmosphere. Every time Michigan goes on the road, it's a big game, and you know, we won't have that atmosphere this year at Minnesota. So we'll see if that's an equalizer. And then coming off that opener, get Mel Tucker at home in Ann Arbor 2 years in a row. Michigan's going to get the Spartans at home. Halloween. We won't have the Jim Harbaugh lookalikes in the crowd, unfortunately, but I'm sure that outside the stadium, it's still going to be pretty lively that Halloween weekend against Michigan State. So a very interesting week two from the standpoint of, we don't know anything about Michigan State. I'm not sure Mel Tucker knows much about Michigan State, and Michigan State plays Rutgers week one. So we may not find out a ton about them in the first week, though. That's going to be we're going to learn a lot about that Michigan State team there in week two.
I think it's perfect that it's right there, I feel like, for everybody involved. Cause like, this is why I sometimes get, when college football seasons, we talk so many times about, you know, kind of the weirdness of how college football works, where you play these teams that are, you know, basically playing football on a different level than you, a lower level to start the season. You sort of tiptoe in and we figure out where we're at and all this. It's like a preseason almost. There is no preseason here. You're diving in right away with a real team on the road, and then you go into week two with the team that obviously is rebuilding and in a crazy scenario, but their entire year, Michigan State's entire year, is going to hinge on how they perform in that game. Like, whether they want to admit it or know it or whatever or not, they probably would admit it to you at this point. That is their opportunity to come in as Mel Tucker in a season where they really don't have anything to lose. The scenario has been awkward for them from the start due to the timing that, you know, when he was hired, the pandemic obviously challenged them more than it challenged most teams, and that's in the same situation. So there's not a lot to lose, and they, you know, we know nothing about them at all. We probably won't know much, like you said, Austin, after that first game against Rutgers. Who knows how that's going to look? We would expect Michigan wins that game. They were so much better than them a year ago. It would stand to reason that the talent gap there is still very much what it was a year ago. But, you know, if you're Michigan, you're not tiptoeing into that one. You're diving in head first into the deep end and seeing how cold the water is, and you're going to figure it out. Like, that's what I like about this schedule, is that, for everybody really, but especially for Michigan, there's not going to be any time to wander around. They're not going to have any time in these next 4 weeks. And Jim Harbaugh's mentioned a few times on a few interviews how he's likened it to like military you know, preparation about just getting through the next day or whatever. The first camp that they ever had, that submarine camp where they all, you know, he shut everybody out and wouldn't talk to anybody and all this for 3, 4, 5 weeks, whatever it was. That worked, by the way. They were ready to go. Like he stressed sudden change on them in that first month and it worked. And if they can sort of, you know, get together, not worry about anything else, bunker down together, which they don't have any other choice. They have to bunker down together. You know, who knows? Maybe they come together as a team. Maybe that's the benefit of all this. If on certain teams, if you get, you become closer maybe than you would have been otherwise, perhaps. Who knows? If you're in these situations where you're struggling together or trying to make it work together and you don't have any time to waste, because you don't. There's no easy stuff here. There's no breathers. Your breather is Rutgers on November 21st, and you got a whole month before that. So you've got to figure it out pretty quickly, even in a game like Michigan State where you would expect to have a, you know, sizable advantage in terms of your roster. But who knows, right? And it's a rivalry game, and obviously if you lose that one, oh my God, the stuff that comes out of that one's not going to be pretty. So diving right in, no time to waste. I love it. I think it's perfect. I would have been disappointed if they'd started out with like Rutgers, Maryland, and a crossover with Illinois. I think that would have been boring. So let's get in. If we're going to do this, let's do it right. And I think that's a cool way to start.
Yeah, we touched on this last time, but I think a lot of what we're going to see early in the season is going to go back to What were you doing in August and September? Yeah. You know, it's interesting to read stuff about the Pac-12 because it seems in the Pac-12, it was basically like, okay, we're not playing, everybody go home. Mm-hmm. And guys like haven't touched a weight in like 6 or 8 weeks. You know, Michigan has, and Jim Harbaugh's brought this up, you know, they've been going just kind of slow and steady. You know, they haven't had to shut down because of outbreaks. You know, they've just kind of put their nose down and, you know, continued to prepare as if they were going to play. And so we'll find out, does that translate to a sharper team earlier in the season compared to other teams that maybe had to shut down, or, you know, teams that maybe let off the gas a little bit after the season got postponed? You know, a lot of those things will become apparent, I think, pretty quickly. And the other thing we'll see is how many of these guys who opted out originally with the thought that there wasn't going to be a fall season, how many of them are back on the field by week one? I know you talked to some people about Jalen Mayfield's situation. You know, originally he left, signed with an agent, but now seems like he's wants to come back and play, and Michigan is figuring out the process of making that happen. The other two, Ambry Thomas and Nico Collins, haven't heard definitively that they've made decisions. Still up in the air there. But what do you anticipate happening now with the guys who have opted out?
Yeah, Mayfield wants to do it. Obviously, everyone's reported that by now. But you know, he wants to come back and play, you know, at least one more year here at Michigan. There's hoops they have to jump through, you know, compliance stuff with the Big Ten and I assume the NCAA, but I think the Big Ten is probably going to have to play a role in some of this stuff in some of these situations. I know Minnesota's going through the same thing right now, and some other places as well. Ohio State, I think Wyatt Davis has also said kind of the same thing, that he wants to play. I think Michigan's hopeful is what I would say, talking to some people. I mean, I think that they're hopeful they can find a way to make it work, given this situation, given the pandemic, everything else. You know, if no money exchanged hands and they remained enrolled in school through, you know, virtual sort of online stuff, which I was told that's the case, then Mayfield, you know, should be able to jump through those hoops and should be. I don't know how quickly or how long that would take or what have you, but I would hope that they're able to get that done, because that would make no sense if they're not going to allow allow a kid to come back in this scenario. Ambry Thomas, I know that, I believe, right, he was on with John Jansen right after the announcement and kind of expressed interest with that. Nico hasn't said anything publicly, but obviously, as we know, they are trying to figure out if they can, you know, either convince him to come back while also trying to figure out, you know, if there's paths, you know, if how many hoops they have to jump through on that one too. But obviously, and we talked about it at the very beginning, I mean, Joe Milton and Nico Collins are pretty tight. That's not nothing. Uh-huh. I mean, that's not irrelevant. So, you know, they were pretty tight when Milton got here, and they're about the same age. They're, you know, 1 year apart in class. So who knows? I mean, who knows? I think that's it's all up in the air at the moment here, I guess, on some of that. But as far as we know right now, Mayfield certainly wants to do it. I believe that's his plan. And, you know, Michigan's going to go forward with sort of the hope that they can make that a reality. I don't know all the little details on every single thing, but I can't imagine if a kid wants to come back and do this and they've signed and haven't taken money or what have you, even if they took money and said, I'll give it back, I think you should be able to, if you're the Big Ten or the NCAA, I think you should, you know, that should be settled and they should be able to do that. So hopefully for Michigan's sake, that's a good thing, or Mayfield's sake anyway, that's a good thing. He can come back and, you know, put one more year of good tape out there. I mean, he was great, as we talked about at the end of last season, really trending in a good direction. I thought, you know, one more really good year from him and it could have been a really high draft ceiling, maybe even first round if he had another really good season. So who knows? And then, of course, you know, the same kind of deal. But you also have to remember, you know, this is a weird season. If your body isn't, you know, totally prepared the way you want it to be and you're worried that maybe you're going to get hurt or something, which is, you know, I mean, everyone's worried every time, but like we see the hamstrings and the groins and all this stuff. I mean, I don't know how much you're willing to push it. You know, if you're on the fringe of a draft situation, maybe you are, maybe you aren't. But I think there's so many factors individually that have to go into these decisions for these kids right now, more than any other year. So, yeah. You know, I'm sure they'll allow them to take their time. But, you know, right now it looks like they're still trying on those fronts. Nothing official, anyone being eligible yet, but trending positively there in the Mayfield front, at least.
Yeah, I think we have to keep that in mind that, you know, these players have, you know, basically had their lives upended now multiple times. I mean, look, I know what it was like for me to go from, okay, we're going to play. Oh, we're not going to play. We're definitely not going to play. Now we might play. Oh, we are going to play. It's like at some point it's like, okay, just tell us what you're going to do and let's make a plan here. So I can only imagine what it was like to be in that situation. I mean, Jalen Mayfield was, you know, one of the guys when the season got initially postponed. I think he put it out on social media that, like, you know, just how frustrating it was to feel like you were getting the runaround. You know, I don't blame anybody for hearing what the Big Ten said and listening to the words of Kevin Warren and saying, okay, we're not going to play this fall, so I got to, you know, take care of my own future. I got to give the players a little bit of leeway here, with the understanding that this has changed so many times.
Yes.
You know, that probably we're not really prepared to make a lot of these decisions, and it's just a really fluid situation. But the one thing I think is true that, you know, we hesitate to just take it for granted that if there's a common sense answer that the NCAA is going to arrive at that, because we've all seen examples of NCAA not doing the common sense thing. But it would seem like,
I would have to think in this scenario,
these guys have been through, if somebody wants to play and the only hurdle is that, you know, they signed with an agent because they didn't think there was going to be a season, just let
whatever.
Him play. I mean, you got to do it.
If he took $5,000and says, I'll give the $5,000 back, what are we talking about here?
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? So hopefully, maybe even in this scenario, these situations arise and allow the NCAA to maybe get more realistic with some of the ridiculousness. But I would hope that in all scenarios, Wyatt Davis, Bateman at Minnesota, Jalen Mayfield, whomever else, I would hope all of them are cleared and allowed to come back, even if they did take money. I don't care if they do give it back.
Yeah.
I hope they're all cleared and all able to go out there and do it if that's what they want to do. Like you said, Austin, they've been sort of jerked around all summer through no fault of their own. And obviously, I'm not going to blame all the NCAA and Big Ten on everything that happened with the pandemic. But, like, you know, you put them through a lot. I think it's only right if you allow them back in.
Yeah. All right, folks. Well, we're about a week away from teams practicing in pads again. It'll be kind of like the feeling of the first day of camp, even though it'll be the end of September. So Nick and I will continue to be covering all the events at The Athletic. We'll have some cool stuff coming up on the podcast as well. So thanks for checking out our work, and thank you for listening to the RPM Podcast.